Okay, welcome back, and it's time to speak to Ted Pike. Reverend Ted Pike, as many of you know, has been fighting for you, each one of you, and for me, and all Americans, whether they realize it or not, for well over 20 years. He has been trying to hold back, sometimes seemingly, I'm sure he feels like he's the only one at times, the Zionist Jewish onslaught on the First Amendment, and the rest of the Constitution as well, the right to freedom of speech. And with freedom of speech, of course, comes freedom of thought. If we can't think without fear, we certainly can't speak without fear. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again, Jeff.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I don't know how many years we've been doing this, but we're still fighting and we're still winning occasionally, and we're really up against an enormous enemy, just huge. And without your work and your leadership, I think it would have been over long ago, frankly.
Well, thank you. I actually have been kind of luxuriating over the last couple of years in the reluctance of the hate crimes Gestapo to enforce the federal hate crimes bill. As you were just mentioning, we have played a pivotal role in holding back and actually helping defeat three times in the last 10 years the federal hate crimes bill, the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Prevention Act. And yet it seems like the ADL and Derek Holder, Justice Department, and so on, is becoming aggressive, wanting to get down to business and begin to enforce this Orwellian legislation. I sent out several e-alerts just this past week about how the FBI has indicted seven Amish men for the hate crime, supposed hate crime, of forcibly cutting off the beards of their theological Amish opponents. And while I certainly don't condone this hooliganism and so on, nevertheless, I had to point out that just earlier this year, there was a very prominent ultra-Orthodox rabbi in New York who was very, very much like the leader of the Amish, Sam Mullet. He had his own kind of henchmen. He intimidated those who wouldn't come to his synagogue and so on. Actually, evidently tried down to burn down the house of one dissident ultra-Orthodox Jew, terribly burning him, crippling him for a full year with 50% of third-degree burns and so on. And yet it was out of the question for Eric Holder to indict anybody for a hate crime in that instant last May. But when fundamentalist Christians, these Amish, get out of line, become violent and persecutive and so on, immediately the FBI is taking that very, very seriously, as they said. This is a hate crime worthy of 10 years in federal prison. And what I point out is that we have to start putting some checks and balances on the aggressiveness of hate bill enforcement, because I'm afraid what's going to happen is if we do not begin speaking out and actually militating toward repeal of the hate bill, we can start stacking up a number of legal precedents which are going to enmesh us in a head crimes Gestapo here, not unlike what took over Canada in 1971.
Oh, yeah. How many bills are pending right now?
Well, there's actually no bills pending right now that I know of. With the Republican Tea Party victory in Congress, it's pretty much put the kibosh on aggressive hate bill promotion by the ADL. On the other hand, the ADL is very successful on the state level in passing anti-bullying legislation, which is basically bills that make it a hate crime to criticize homosexuality, especially on high school, grade school, college campuses. There's tremendous sympathy for homosexual youth who are harassed, bullied, intimidated because of their gay lifestyle. And this is also a speech crime or a hate crime, a type of legislation, because it denies Christian students, it denies Christian faculty even the right to express their biblical Christian convictions that homosexuality is wrong. And if they do that, they certainly, as in California and other states, they face termination as a teacher. They face expulsion as students. And this is not free speech.
We're also facing now something that is inexplicable, if not inextricable, in terms of getting it out of our society. And that's the growing awareness that there is a huge layer of child sexual abuse, ritual child abuse, pedophilia that is running through all levels of society, especially the power elite. This has become so ugly and so monstrous that many people, I think, just really shut off from it. They don't want to confront it. I mean, this, what we found and what we see in the media is almost not even on the radar. It's so teeny tiny compared to what's really going on. What's going on is a national, local, regional network, international network of child trafficking, of horrible things that I wouldn't even want to mention on this program.
Yes. Well, I did have a reprint just this last week of my very, very popular article. It's entitled Pedophilia, the Talmud's Dirty Secret.
Right.
And I point out there that while the Roman Catholic clergy has been roundly criticized and excoriated and exposed and sued and so on for its child abuse cases, the fact is that there is going on within ultra-Orthodox Judaism and Orthodox Judaism to a lesser extent, very, very extensive child molestation among especially the Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox rabbis. This goes on in Canada. This goes on in New York, especially in Israel. Just this very day, practically, Rabbi Elon, one of the virtually the Billy Graham of ultra-Orthodox Judaism in Israel, is facing trial now for a long string of child molestation cases. And sadly, what I have to point out is that the Talmudic authority for this pedophilia is very, very well documented within the Babylonian Talmud. And in my article, which can be found either at rents.com or truthtellers.org, I very extensively, exhaustively, in fact, document the many, many statements in the Babylonian Talmud, which is the highest ethical and religious authority for modern Talmudic Judaism, giving endorsement to the rabbis to have sex with little girls, 3-year-old girls. And this is considered of no moral consequence. And what that does, of course, is give a green light, because the ancient rabbis, they're greater authority than Moses, certainly greater authority than the Hebrew prophets or any Old Testament figures. Mm-hmm. These the greatest of rabbis, such as Simeon ben Yohai, what they spoke, these rabbis today believe and teach came literally from the throne of God. It's believed that rabbis like Simeon ben Yohai pre-existed in heaven and learned everything they knew about Jewish law from Moses in heaven, from God himself. So when they speak on earth, they have tremendous authority as for halakha or binding Jewish law. And so what we find is that rabbis such as Simeon ben Yohai very boldly endorse child sex and the right to have sex and marry 3-year-old baby girls. What this translates to in the present tense is that this influence upon ultra-Orthodox rabbis is profound. They take the authority, they take the precedent right out of their Jewish law, and they apply it in permissiveness, moral permissiveness with children and youth, and eventually they get caught, and the consequences to the reputation of Judaism right now are staggering. However, of course, the evangelical media, the Jewish controlled media, plays along and censors all of this from the Western public. Of course, the Catholics, they are fair game, but the Jews are completely off limits.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took the liberty of reprinting this article again just recently, got a tremendous response for the reprint, because we need to be even-handed. We need to know, as you say, that that pedophilia, moral degeneracy is wide, but Judaism is no exception.
Now, all right. Reverend Ted Pike is with us, and again, Ted's work has been monumental in helping us maintain what's left of our freedoms in this country in terms of speech and thought and writing. And we will be right back with Ted. Okay, back with Ted Pike. Ted, how about the comparative strength of the Zionist Jewish machine in this country? And talk about AIPAC first. How are they faring? I guess after looking at the Republican candidates at that Jewish forum, there's a mini debate the other night. I've got a piece up on that. In fact, John Stewart did it. The word shame doesn't even come close. What a despicable performance by these people. Literally groveling to less than 2% of the U.S. population and 0.2% of the world population. It was just a contest at who could lick more boots. It was, these are not people of integrity, of character, of dignity, of morality at all. They're horrors.
Well, the paradox is that the world today in general has never been more anti-Zionist.
Oh, it's growing.
People are waking up.
Yeah, they understand. Yeah. They're under the thumb of the boot. 96% of the major media in this country owned by six corporations, all of them Zionist in their leanings or Zionist outright.
That's right, and I do mention in a recent e-alert that Abe Foxman, the head of the ADL, is crying crocodile tears. He's saying that back in 2004, the ADL founded its Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which was to be this huge 56-member nation hate crimes Gestapo enforcing ADL hate crimes doctrine throughout the world. And yet now he says only four nations are actively supplying statistics for the ADL and the OSCE. And what that translates into is that ADL's Department of Global Anti-Semitism, which was also mandated by Congress in 2004 in the U.S. State Department, is shriveling down to nothing because it depends on these statistics that were supposed to be supplied by these OSCE countries. And in fact, just this last week, Foxman was imploring the Helsinki Commission in the U.S. Congress, saying, please help us revive opposition to anti-Semitism in Europe and pass hate laws. He says we need more hate laws, and we want the U.S. Congress to find some way to put pressure on European countries to start producing more hate laws to keep anti-Semitism at bay.
Well,
the problem is now the list of so-called anti-Semites is so long. It's church denominations, it's
right.
Corporations, it's politicians and governments, and even lots of Jews, Jewish intellectuals,
yep,
on and
yep,
on and
yep.
on.
Yeah,
and,
well,
and so
the Zionists have painted themselves in a corner with their anti-Semite paint. They've slung it all
exactly.
over the place, and they are now kind of backed up into a wall.
So here we have explosive criticism of Israel. A projected 140 nations were willing to vote for the supposedly anti-Semitic resolution to give the Palestinians a seat in the UN. And tremendous, unprecedented criticism of Israel from government, from all sources in throughout the world, from China, throughout the Western world. But here in the United States, we have become literally a colony of Israel, and the Zionist, the Jewish supremacists have very wisely understood that they do divest in sinking their greatest investment and control, subversion, influence, money, everything in the United States of America.
Right.
And as a result, Congress is absolutely, as you say, in servitude, bootlicking to the Zionists, even the stalwart Republicans who worked so hard to defeat the federal hate bill, like Louis Gohmert and Forbes and all the rest of them, They are there more prominently than anyone else, applauding when Netanyahu comes to speak to Congress, because they know that Bible Belt Christianity, evangelical Zionist Christianity, will not vote them back into office unless they bend the knee to Israel. So in answer to your question, AIPAC is very strong. A Zionist media control, government control, ADL, and so on still remain a very prevalent power block in the United States.
Asking European countries individually is pretty much now headed out the door and into the trash can of history. The formation of the EUSSR is well underway now. You've seen Merkel and Sarko demanding, basically, that that happens, that countries give up their sovereignty. The UK is refusing. Cameron is saying no, which is kind of interesting because that's where the city of London is located. But we'll see. It's sad to see Europe being homogenized and spayed and neutered and literally turned into a Zionist cash cow and a zombified relic of what it once was. These were vibrant nations with their own culture, their own history. You go into a country and you feel it, you see it. Now it's all being taken down. And under the flood tide, the tsunami of illegal immigration, all of these countries are now fighting for their very identities, what's left of it.
Absolutely.
It's quite amazing. Hold on, we'll pause and come back with Reverend Ted in just a few minutes. Okay, and we're back with Ted Pike. So, Ted, if there are no hate laws pending right now, we both know that there are things on the drawing board. Where do you expect the next assault against our First Amendment to come from?
Well, I think that we can expect the ADL holder, the Justice Department, and so on to pick and choose exactly the kind of offenses that will have public sympathy, as this Amish case does.
Right. We need to talk about that, too. Go ahead.
Yes, that they're not going to want to create controversy. They're going to want to find examples of real terrorism, hooliganism, abuse, whatever, that cannot be argued with, and begin to lay down a track record of convictions, of legal precedents. And if there's controversy, or if these are contested and they go to federal courts, to have their liberal lackeys, the liberal judges, adjudicate from the bench, laying down case law precedents that they can build a structure, as I said, that will enmesh hate law within our judicial system. And, of course, that's the worst kind of a scenario, because we cannot get extricated out of that easily, and it gets harder and harder to militate in favor of actually declaring the law unconstitutional. That's why I'm very, very concerned that the first signs of aggressiveness are coming out. There have been some smaller, less visible cases of the Justice Department going after a real right-wing fanatics and terrorists and so on that haven't received this publicity. But humanity was very shocked at the violation of the religious and civil rights of these Amish people. And I don't think there's been much opposition to what the FBI is doing. But we have to realize that they are, you see, the ADL worked from 1998. They worked more than 10 years. 12 years it was, in order to pass their federal hate crimes bill. They worked and never gave up on that. And we fought them, of course, at every stage, because there's so much hanging in the passage of the hate bill as far as their conspiracy to end freedom and create a Jewish supremacist overlay of our society.
All right. The Amish story. What happened Tell us why it's important. A lot of people missed it, even though you wrote about it and I ran stories about it. What happened?
Well, there is an Amish religious figure by the name of Sam Mullet, who is accused of all kinds of things, from seducing married women and actually sleeping with newly married women for 3 days to ritually purify them. He's accused of, and he and his sons and his followers, various indignities against people, including shutting them up in chicken coops and all kinds of things like that. In a situation like this where the facts are known, you can expect that he has a lot of enemies, and the rumors and the accusations of fly fast and furiously. What seems to be absolutely undeniable was that at least three of his sons and three followers did forcibly pin down a number of Amish theological adversaries and cut off their beards. And, of course, this is viewed by the FBI as a violation of their religious rights, not only the civil rights, but those beards are emblematic of their religious convictions.
Mm-hmm.
And in a real way, what the FBI is saying is that by shearing their beards off, they are committing a felony. They are committing a crime against society, a crime that basically assaults the freedom of religion of all men and all Americans. And so they're saying it's much more than a misdemeanor. It goes into the level of a felony. And one of the things that's so ominous about the federal hate bill is that, as I've said many times on the radio, it gives the federal government the right to completely bypass asking any permission from the local attorney generals in the state for rights to come in and to investigate, arrest, and to try so-called hate crimes cases in the state. And basically, that's a unification. When the government can do that, and it is no longer under any kind of restraint, basically you have a police state. You have a union of federal and local policing powers. And what's happened here is this is exactly what's happened. The FBI came in, and the local attorney general, he said, I'll gladly give the case to you. This is a perfect example of violation of the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Prevention Act, and let's go ahead and take it all the way. And the problem is that 10 years in prison is a vastly disproportionate penalty for shaving off the beards of men where there's been no physical harm, there's been indignity, there's an assault on their civil rights, religious rights, and so on. But
they do these kinds of things in Ted. Excuse me. They do these kinds of things in college fraternities.
I know it. Of course, for hundreds of years, the hazing in fraternities, the hair has been cut off, all kinds things like that, and nobody has even thought of it as something that should be taken to the law. But what the federal hate law now has is the right to triple penalties. In fact, triple felonies. What the federal hate law has the right to do is, number one, take a misdemeanor and elevate it to a much more serious crime, that of a felony. And then once it's determined to be a felony, then they can triple the penalty of a felony. That's how you can take this indignity of these hooligans, and you can exaggerate it to 10 years in prison, which is nearly twice the time in prison if they committed rape. And so one of the distinctive features of all ADL hate laws everywhere is this vastly disproportionate punishment. What ADL is telling us is that bias-motivated crime or even bias-motivated speech is so very, very, very bad that it deserves triple penalties for felonies. And what this is it's a reversion back to almost a feudal distortion of jurisprudence.
Right.
Remember back in the times of the feudal kings, if a starving peasant killed one of the king's deer, he had to die for it. Well, that's pretty close to what we're seeing now.
Wow. Yeah, not encouraging. It's strange how the darkness of these kinds of behaviors can creep in into what we call modern life. But then again, you look at the Muslim religion and honor killings and female sexual mutilation, and my goodness, I just seem to see it looks to me at times as if this species is in retrograde and it's deconstructing. It's certainly being guided in that direction by many people. All right, hold on. We'll be right back with our conversation with Ted Pike after this. Okay, and we're back with Ted Pike. Who's been attacking Ted Pike lately? You've been in line for some pretty vicious stuff over the years. Anything current?
Nobody has been attacking me, really. I did have some problems with Joe Farah, which you reported on, and I did not get an apology from him, but I didn't expect that. Actually, I think the ADL is very wise in giving me the silent treatment. They do have, of course, 11 pages at ADL.org with a lot of misinformation about me, and nuances, and guilt by association, that kind of thing. But they know that Abe Foxman knows that I'm out to expose him, to basically bring him into a state of intellectual disgrace in this country. I believe he too long has been pontificating as a legitimate civil rights leader and civil liberties group, the ADL, which he leads. What we need to do, and I point this out in one of my recent articles, is that while the world is criticizing Israel, the Jewish supremacists, ADL, B'nai B'rith, Southern Poverty Law, ACLU, are kind of hiding in the shadows. They don't want to let it be known that they are complicit with Israel. They are identical spiritually, ideologically, politically with the goals of Israel. And I think what we need to do in order to really hold back the hate law agenda, keep the hate laws from swallowing us up as they did in Canada, what we need to do is very, very, very boldly continue to speak out on the internet and in church and on talk radio and so on, tying together ADL as the PR representative of Israel with hate laws worldwide. And I think it's already working. As you were saying, I've been battling hate laws, and I've been identifying ADL with hate laws worldwide, certainly since 1989. And I believe that one of the reasons that only four of the 56 members of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe now are cooperating with ADL is they're beginning to realize that how can ADL really, really care about victims of hate when it itself is supporting the total trampling of the rights and the liberties and the feelings and the economic aspirations of the people of Gaza and the Palestinians. And what we need to do is to hold up Foxman, ADL, B'nai B'rith as hypocrites, draw some of the fire that's now going against Israel back on to the liberal Jewish supremacist community. Right. And let them know if they're going to push hate laws down our throats, we're going to fight back. We're going to turn the spotlight on them as the creators of freedom-destroying hate laws worldwide.
Well said. Well said. As you look at the American political scene, there really isn't much to hope for. If you're honest about it, and you are, and logical and deductive in your analysis of what's going on out there, who's saying what, it's the same old stuff. We need to really vacuum Washington, D.C. clean from top to bottom and start over again. There should be term limits, maybe two for the House of Representatives, certainly one for the Senate. I don't understand how the country can continue on much longer on the road it has been put on. And it has been put on a road. It's no accident we're on this road. We are being turned into something that is inimical to what America was for a long time and is supposed to be. And if the Constitution is not pulled back forward and made the law of the land. It's not now. We're done. We're toast.
Yeah.
4 more years of Obama and we're done.
Yeah. Well, as a Christian minister, as an evangelical Christian, I am acutely aware that a huge part of the problem we have literally in the whole world is a result of evangelical Christian complicity with
it
this
is.
Whole,
absolutely.
Whole Zionist
yep.
Conspiracy going back at least 100 years, a minimum of 100 years.
A couple
and,
hundred, easy.
Yeah, and what my basic mission is to speak to my brethren, my theological brethren, and let them know that Christian Zionism is not authentic Christianity. In fact, I have an article at truthtellers.org entitled, Why Christian Zionism is a Cult. And I point out that one of the marks of any kind of a cult of Christianity is that they pull out only those verses which seem to prove their point and neglect the great majority of verses which don't, which contradict what they're trying to say. And nowhere is that this characteristic of a cult more revealed than in Christian Zionism. And so I've been battling for my lifetime in many videos and book and so on, and many hundreds of articles, to awaken the grassroots Bible Belt heartland Christian fundamentalists, many of whom are the salt of the earth. They are good people, but they have been so deluded and gotten swept away in a non-biblical, romantic view of Israel. And actually what they're doing is they are building up what I call Babylon the Great, the very, very juggernaut of international ultimate world rule, which will turn on them someday in terrible persecution.
Well, all right. So what do you want for Christmas, Ted?
For Christmas? Well, my great joy is speaking the whole truth. There's something so clean and redeeming and refreshing about being able to speak the whole truth. And by God's grace, I've been given the liberty to speak out in a number of writings, articles every week. And I'm so grateful that you publish my works and reach many thousands of people every week. My joy is to do the whole truth, speak the whole truth, and I'm going to do it for the duration.
You have a growing number of constituents. Are you pulling people from the Christian evangelical Zionist radicalized 30 to 35 million cadre that exists in this country? Are those people, some of them, waking up and realizing that they've been duped? Otherwise, they're going to be the last to figure it out.
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, I wrote an article that you published several months ago in which I think the title of the article was Christian Zionists Flocking, Evangelicals Flocking
truthtellers.org. Right.
And we have a Bible studies, twice weekly Bible studies, which are slanted very much toward reaching out to evangelicals, not just in a political way, but in a spiritual way. And those are enormously popular. And we have around up to 8,000 evangelical visits there every month of people who are sick and tired of their pro-Zionist evangelical churches and want to come with their families and their friends and have some real spiritual meat twice a week. Very popular. They're a little bit long. They're not your 20-minute drive through sermons. They average about an hour and a half. But people like that. I'm very surprised at the willingness of large numbers of evangelicals now to come to Truth Tellers and sit back with their friends and enjoy some real truth and light in these very dark times.
Very good. All right. So who are our supporters, our champions in this country now, who are people of stature, people of public notoriety? Who do you lean to? You mentioned Gohmert and all that. But again, when you see them giving Netanyahu 30 standing ovations, you kind of feel a little bit uneasy, embarrassed, betrayed. I mean, you know, come on, guys. You either are or you aren't. You can't have it both ways.
Well, apart from Ron Paul and maybe even to a certain extent Rand Paul, I don't have any heroes in the public spectrum, but I do know of people in our movement who are indefatigable in speaking the truth as they understand it. Certainly Nathaniel Kapner is outstanding. You are outstanding. Appreciate what David Duke does in spitting out the whole truth. Had some disagreement with him on racial types of issues, but nevertheless, you cannot help but admire his courage. Certainly Tex Mar is speaking out the truth as he understands it.
Mm-hmm.
There are people here that are unprecedented in American history who are still beacons of light, putting their light of truth on the highest mountain that they can possibly have, and of course that is the internet now. And I just think that I think the influence of alternative talk radio and internet is wider than we dream. I believe it percolates across all kinds of boundaries, and I know that it does influence people far from where we think we are addressing our message. And we just have to continue to tell the truth, and the truth has a cleansing and a redeeming quality.
Mm-hmm.
It does not breed abuse. It does not breed anti-Semitism or racism or hatred.
No, of course not.
It brings truth and light and cleansing to society.
To all peoples. All peoples,
yes,
of goodwill and morality and good intent. It's all about intent. Thank you,
yes,
Ted, for everything, and it's good to talk to you again. Merry Christmas to you and yours. If I don't talk to you before then, I will on the internet, of course, but we owe you a great debt, and your gift to us is really boundless, so thank you for that.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, my friend. Good night.
Good night.
Reverend Ted Pike, and there we go.